New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce, alongside Dylan White, the reigning NFBC co-champion. It's the last time I can probably say that, I'm guessing, Dylan.
You can say it for six more days.
Six more days, but I don't know if we're going to record in the next 6 days. So
you should still be saying it.
By the time we record the next podcast, you may not be the reigning NFBC champion. I could say the 2023 NFBC main event champion.
The only former, year that matters.
Former NFBC main event champion, Dylan.
Yeah.
What's going
yeah.
on, Dylan? How's it going, man?
I'm surprisingly glued to my screen with the real-time updates of like stats because, like I said last week, I think my home league, I'm in the finals with like my high school buddy, and there's a lot of trash talk going back and forth and a lot of exaggerated, oh my God, this is over. Oh, struck out with the bases loaded, like that type of thing. So it's very, very immature, but very fun. So I've been paying attention to that. But I'm fighting for second in like, I'm not going to win anything, I don't think, except maybe this home league, but it's like second holding on for dear life, fourth fighting for third. Like, it's like, I'm trying to money in all these leagues. So it actually is kind of exciting considering it's been a down year overall.
Yeah, that's not too bad. That is, that's pretty exciting. I've been creeping up in that DC. All right. Yeah.
Julio,
5 points last week. So we're making headway. My hitters are hitting. I got Cassis on that team.
Nice.
You know, pitching has been pretty good. The guy in front of me, though, has been gaining the same amount of points. So we're doing is just putting more space between us and third place, fourth, you know, the rest of the league. So I've only gained like 2 points in the guy. I was hoping that he had Reed Detmers in his team. Just based on what that outing was like last week, that was not the case, unfortunately. So I think I'm glued into second place there, but a valiant finish, and squad's been pretty good. It was deep, you know. If I hadn't taken damn Jackson Holiday as early as I did, who knows what would have happened, Dylan? Who knows? Yeah, if I had taken somebody else that actually produced, team might be better. Yeah, it was a funky first half with that team because I had a lot of injuries, guys that weren't hitting, and in the second half, ton of players came on. Parker Meadows was maybe like the underrated MVP of this team. He's been really good in the second half. As the Tigers, of course, have pushed their way into the playoff picture, that organization is really, for the first time, I think, as long as I have been writing about baseball, this is the first time that the Tigers are in a really good spot. It's been a really, really long time. Playoff team, I don't know if you saw the article that we released on Baseball America on Monday, but they had the best overall winning percentage of any organization among their minor league affiliates. So there's some stuff going on there. Of course, they have some good prospects. They've had some prospects that have been called up. Jace Young has been actually hitting pretty well recently. So a lot going on there in a positive light for the Tigers. Their fans are excited, and I'm happy to see it because I will say that it was among the most negative fan bases over my time writing about baseball, you know, which has been just about a decade now. I think next year will be a full 10 years that I've been in the game. And they were always really negative about prospects and for good reason. So organizations headed in a good direction. Kind of crazy that the guys that they got back in the Flaherty trade have certainly help them. Lorenzo's been awesome. Sweeney's been playing shortstop, and you know, he's been a productive member of that team and, you know, part of this push. So you can't say that was a bad deal, but at the same time, you're kind of looking back on it now and be like, what if they also had Jack Flaherty? But that being said, it's all a long segue, Dylan. Jackson Job coming up, I guess, to debut in the major leagues. I don't know if he's going to be a starter. My guess is probably not. I haven't seen any follow-up on that this afternoon. I'm sure somebody's probably already put it out there. I would assume it's going to be in like a multi-inning relief role. Maybe he gets a spot start at the end of the season. Very reminiscent of David Price with the Rays in 2008, where they kind of called him up late in the season. He was the number one pitching prospect in baseball, or among the one or two, and pitched out of the bullpen and gave him some big innings on a World Series run. So should be interesting to see what happens with Job. What's your prediction here? Because I had him in some dynasty leagues where I really needed the pitching help, like Raz 30. I wish this could have happened a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, I David Price or like Matt Moore, that type of thing, where he can be even Garrett Crochet kind of in the playoffs, where he can be sort of an impact arm for the team. I don't know, fantasy wise, there's not that much time, like 6 days really, and like I don't know how much of an impact he's going to make. It's also risky to put him in, like in most like weekly leagues or whatever. You have to like commit for the week, so. It's more of it's a great story, and it's great if you have him in dynasty because, you know, like they're serious about him. They're bringing him up early. They want to give him a taste, and you know, he's going to be a huge part of their plans in 2025, basically guaranteed now that they call them up.
Yeah. That's kind of my read on it too. I think it's more like makes the Tigers, who are already a super watchable team right now, obviously in the hunt. You know, if you're into these playoff races, and there's some pretty good ones right now, they were already a team that you're probably honing in on and watching. Job just makes it a little bit more interesting. When Job comes into the game, it's just something else to watch for. So yeah, I don't think there's a huge fantasy impact. As you said, there's 6 days left in the season. Today there were what, three games total on Monday where we're recording this, kind of the last full off day of the season before they're all off. You know, it's funny that they did this now as opposed to like doing it like weeks ago. Am I wrong here? Like this sort of like exaggerated off day Monday where there's a bunch of teams down, this would have been more valuable down the stretch as opposed to like right before the season when, you know, a majority of teams are going to be golfing in a week.
Well, I think the Tigers were kind of surprised themselves that they've been on such a hot streak. Like even 5 days ago, like they were, you know, them and the Twins were kind of battling it for it. And now they've just kind of jumped ahead and their playoff odds are, I don't know if you've seen like the tweets where it's like parabolic heading up. So like, I don't think they thought they'd be in a position where they would be able to, you know, use Job in a meaningful role where it's like kind of guaranteed that he will be able to commit to a meaningful role. Like, this Tiger season has been nuts because like Parker Meadows was terrible at the beginning. We drafted him in a couple teams and we dropped him because he got set down. Spencer Torkelson sent down. Kerry Carpenter was injured for a while. Sawyer Gibson Long out for the year. Like it was just not so great. And obviously you alluded to earlier with the Flaherty, like they were selling at the deadline and they got rid of Jack Flaherty. So like it's completely unexpected for them, the Tigers organization, yeah. I believe. And like, you just look at these, like Bo Brisky is like become like Cy Young in the bullpen. And Tyler Holton is like pitching well and like starter role or like opening role and relieving Jason Foley got three saves last week. Like it's pretty nuts. It's all kind of coming up roses for them right now. So I don't think they expected 2 weeks ago that, you know, let's bring up Jackson Job and he'll help us make a push for the playoffs. It's sort of like, whoa, we're going to be in the playoffs. So let's like get our best team that we can while the fan base is electrified.
Yeah, let's put the best possible team together. It's interesting. I think, you know, we're going to get Cleveland, New York, Houston, Baltimore, Detroit. And then it's kind of a battle. I mean, the Twins are still only a game behind Kansas City and Detroit. Seattle is two behind. Boston is four. They're not going to make up those games, though. I think at this point you can more or less call them out of the race. Tampa, though, is funny, right? Tampa dealt at the deadline. It looked like they were selling. There's a case that they should have maybe been buyers. No, because they're only four games out of the playoffs, as we're in the last week here. they certainly, with Arizarena, who was surging in the second half, I think there's a chance that they make more of a push. I could be wrong. One of the most interesting teams to me, though, and I think the Dodgers will end up winning the division. You know, we got the Phillies, we got the Brewers. San Diego has been on an absolute tear in the second half. I think I saw, like, I could be wrong in this number, so don't quote me directly. I think over their last 56 games, there's something like 40 and 16. I mean, their winning percentage has been absurd. You could argue that they've been among the best teams in baseball in the second half. How much of a shot would you give? This is turning into a handicapping podcast, apparently, but how much of a shot would you give the Padres to potentially make a deep run here in the playoffs?
I mean, they can definitely do it. I mean, they shored up their bullpen. They got Tanner Scott. They got Jason Adam. So those are good high leverage arms. They're doing well. It looks like Tanner Scott's closing now because they're kind of babying Robert Suarez, who's been effective pretty much all year as well. Musgrove is on fire. Dylan Cease is on fire. Yu Darvish is kind of getting back into Yu Darvish territory. Like they have a deep sort of rotation. They got a deep bullpen that's high leverage. And then, you know, for Fernando Tatis Jr., you can never count him out. Manny Machado, Xander Bogaerts. Like these are stars. Jackson Merrill, of course. Like
I'm not Luis Arraez.
Luis Arraez, exactly.
Good lineup.
It is a good lineup. And any like they're not counting on one person. That like if Tatis slumps, then you know the whole team is in trouble. Like they have, it's pretty much deep all the way down. Like even like Cronenworth and guys like that are productive hitters who can kind of keep the chain rolling. So they very easily, stranger things have happened than you know a team like the Padres going deep into the playoffs.
And we've seen a surge from the Diamondbacks again in the second half. This is starting to turn into a trend. Corbin Carroll has really recovered some value. Now, I don't think he's going to be first round Corbin Carroll again this year. I mean, 2025 drafts. How do you view Carroll going into the offseason? Because I don't think we can forget how bad the first half was. It tanked a lot of teams. I had one where I took him the first round, and it was a real killer. Just in terms of where you could have taken him, other players you could have taken that were still on the board, guys like Ohtani, etc. You know, Bobby Witt, Aaron Judge. He was getting taken over a lot of those guys in drafts. So I guess the question for me is, where do you think, and I know it's very, very early, so we're not going to hold you to this if we change our rankings in a month when we start to work on that. Where would you have him just in terms of redraft? Where would you have him next year in terms of where you think is expected ADP?
I don't think it's going to be that much lower than it was. Like he won't be like top five pick, but he'll be first or second round. I don't think he's going to go later than the second round. His stats now are, I'm just pulling them up now, 20 home runs, like 21 home runs, 32 stolen bases. So, and the fact that he's doing it in the second half, a lot of people forget about what happens in the first half because they just see the final numbers and it's like, oh, he got hot. So that was just a slump. Like they just write it off with recency bias. So he's a 106 WRC plus now. He had a 132 last year. The big difference is like he had a 285 batting average and he has a 230 this year. So projections, basically I'm looking at Steamer 259, Zips 254, the bat 264. So like 260, so splitting the difference. 120 WRC plus basically. So again, splitting the difference. So he'll be 24 years old with two seasons of at least 20 home runs and 30 stolen bases. Splitting the difference is 23 home runs, 40 stolen bases. Like that is a very valuable player. And the fact that he's 24 means there's a high upside, a high chance for a 90th percentile outcome, a better chance of that happening than, a 34-year-old player. So I think he'll be first or second round. I don't think it's reaching to have him in the back of the first round at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. It might be a more palatable price too, if you're not investing in like a top three pick. Hopefully he doesn't slump next year and he puts together a full healthy season. We get 150 games of Carroll doing what he needs to do. But sophomore slump, guys need to make adjustments. League maybe pitched him a little bit differently. Some of it I think was luck as well. I think a lot of the concerns about his shoulder were overblown. He certainly has shown that. So yeah, I'm still all in terms of making that investment for sure. Maybe he's just not the the full-on superstar that we anticipated. But sometimes guys have bad first halves, and then they get beyond it, and it was a learning experience, etc. All right, Dylan, you put out a great article last week. It was the pitching answer to my minor league hitters to, with traits to target in fantasy in 2025. We talked about that last week. We're going to talk about that in a minute when we come back from this break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. We mean it. We have a college baseball writer opening at Baseball America right now. And where are we posting it? Indeed. Because Indeed makes hiring easy, and it gives us great candidates. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses, including Baseball America, worldwide, that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. What she's discovered is that the way that many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that can be wrecking your dog's health. And this is true for even many premium brands. Fortunately, she's found that just by adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformations in their health. She's made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone could do the same thing to see incredible changes to their dog's health. I've got two dogs, and I want them to be with me for a very long time. There's a lot of good stuff here that made me think about how most dog foods are made, what to avoid for my dogs, and superfoods that are great for them. If you want to keep your dog healthy and happy, go to badlandsfood.com/baseball and watch Catherine's video right now. Again, that's badlandsfood.com/baseball. I don't know about you, but I love fall. Fall is a time where the weather just feels perfect from the start of the day to the end. It's a great time for me to get on a bike, take a good long ride where it's nice and crisp, not cold, but crisp. And it's time for new fall traditions, like getting regular hydration and energy from Liquid IV. Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers 100 milligrams of natural caffeine plus 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, so you can accomplish all the things you want and need to do. And they've combined their popular peach flavor with the highly requested blackberry to awaken your senses and keep you coming back for more. Liquid IV makes my workouts more enjoyable. It's really easy to prep. I just take my water bottle, fill it with water, some ice, pour in the Liquid IV, stir it up. It's ready to go. It gives me better hydration than I would if I was just using water. It's something that just makes those bike rides even more enjoyable than they were before. Hydration Multiplier Plus Energy delivers energy comparable to 1 to 2 cups of coffee through about 100 milligrams of naturally occurring caffeine. Experience the deliciousness of one of our best-selling flavors, peach, perfectly paired with the highly requested blackberry. It's an all-in-one formula that provides mind and body energy plus hydration that leaves you feeling focused, alert, and ready to take on anything. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. Powered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink. 8 essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Start a new fall tradition with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
All right, and we're back. As we had promised, we're going to talk a little bit about Dylan's article here. Probably hit the high notes in terms of minor league pitchers with traits to target for fantasy in 2025. First name you have on this list, he is our, it's going to be announced today. I don't think I'm breaking any news. He's going to be our minor league pitcher of the year. I believe he's going to be on our hot sheet show as well for an interview. That is the left-handed pitcher of the St. Louis Cardinals, Quinn Matthews. Talk to me a little bit about Quinn Matthews, what you like about Matthews. He's the first name that you have listed here.
Yeah, so the way I went about doing this is, since we have like the pitch level data, I took each pitcher's arsenal. I tried to keep it above like 5% thrown, like frequency thrown, as kind of considering it a pitch. So if you threw a pitch, you know, 2% of the time, I didn't really count it. And I compared that pitch's results in terms of whiffs, chases, CSW, ball percentage, and compared that against the average for that pitch type at the level. So instead of looking at like IVB and VAA or horizontal break or velocity and saying, wow, this pitch, you know, is thrown at one standard deviation faster than the average fastball, I'm looking at, does it get whiffs at one standard deviation above the average fastball, for example. So doing that, I assign grades, not scouting grades, but actual results-based grades. And so Quinn Matthews has a four-seam fastball. We've talked about this at length. He's gained like 3 miles per hour from last year. He's actually getting stronger as the season progresses. Since July or June 28th, he has added like a mile per hour on all his pitches, which were already up from the year before. So he throws this four seam fastball at like 96 miles an hour, 48% of the time. So quite a lot. And it gets, you know, average whiffs, chases, CSW, all that stuff. So it grades as a 52. His slider grades as a 60, basically. His changeup grades as a 60. Those are his three predominant pitches, like 93% of his pitches. So he basically has two plus pitches and an average pitch, and he also throws a curveball. So he has four pitches, and these do correlate to performance. If you look at the major league, do this sort of same exercise with major league pitchers and look at how many pitches they have that are, you know, average or better. And if you have three average pitches, you're actually pretty good. And if you have add some above average and plus to that, you're even better, obviously. So he's showing a very good arsenal. He's in AAA now. He's kind of slowed down. I mean, the season's over now, but he kind of slowed down on his arc of ascension once he got to AAA. But, you know, Quinn Matthews, probably the breakout pitcher of the minor leagues and the number one person on this list.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because Matthews has, you know, two, we'll say, plus secondaries in the slider and the curveball based on the model, and, you know, the slider and the changeup based on the model. Four seam, just a little bit above average, but I think, you know, if you maybe even factor in a little bit of a cushion for left-handed pitchers that throw as hard as he does, probably ticks up the grade a little bit. And that's something that Eno's been talking about a lot in terms of trying to change and adjust for the stuff model. And I agree with him. I do think that, you know, when you get a guy like this, he throws 94, 95, 96 from the left side with ride, it plays a little bit more. I mean, there's a little bit more deception on that, especially with a lot of left-handed hitters in the major leagues, a little bit harder to hit. So it's really interesting the jumps that he's made in a year when you consider he was not really a stuff guy at Stanford whatsoever. This was a guy that went deep into games, the pitchability guy, was a little bit of a softer tosser. But he built up that ability to get deep into games, see the batting order the third time through. So there's not a lot of concerns. Once he was able to, you know, whatever it was, train with the Cardinals, you know, take some of that devil magic, whatever it might be, it's returning apparently. It allowed him to take another step forward. And I think it does make him really valuable. And him being in AAA and that team needing starters and having a lot of older starters that were under short contracts, it just makes sense that he could be a guy that breaks camp with the team next year. So I think he's going to be a primary target. And I think a lot of the buzz that we maybe had with like Christian Scott early this season and even the offseason going into drafts and throughout draft season, I think that's almost accelerated because I do like Matthews' chances more just because he does have that track record of being a starter for a bunch of years of college in a really competitive program that played big games and then jumps four levels in the minors. You know, I think he didn't really need to go to low A. I think the Cardinals tend to try to avoid Peoria for their best prospects in the early months of the season because it's cold in the Midwest League. It's a tough place to play. And they handled it well. You know, he looks like he's rearing and ready to go next year. All right. We got a couple of Rockies pitchers that I actually saw back-to-back days about a month ago in New Hampshire. Chase Dolander, who, based on the grades, based on the numbers, I think you can argue has the best fastball in the minor leagues, particularly of starters. And then Sean Sullivan, who has a very different fastball, but one that is also very effective despite sitting 86 to 88 miles an hour. But it's a very unusual release. It's a left-hander, a lot of deceptive traits. Talk to me a little bit about these two Rockies and how scared are you of rostering a Rocky starter?
I'll get that out of the way first. I'm pretty scared. I'm not really targeting Dolander anywhere. I'm not really targeting Sullivan anywhere. I'm very curious to see how they do. I really want them to do well. I kind of like what the Rockies are doing in general. Like, even their draft, they're picking guys with like high extension or high VB. Like, they're deliberately picking a type. I think high release points too. So Sullivan kind of speaks to that thing you're saying about lefties. He throws 87 miles an hour and barely registers like on Stuff Plus models, but he throws it 67% of the time. Like, he throws it a lot and it still gets like plus whiffs and chases. Like, it's still a 60. It's like the deception because it's extremely high extension. He gets on it and it has a lot of tail for a four seam. And then he throws in a changeup as his secondary pitch 20% of the time, and that's also a 60. So he's basically a two-pitch pitcher. And we know what the rarefied air in Coors does to breaking balls. They don't move as much. But what about changeups, where it's more of a like a velocity gradient rather than like a horizontal or vertical break gradient? Maybe it'll work. I'm not sure. I'm not willing to bet on it, but you know, if you want to take the shot, there's a very low upside or low downside to taking a shot at it, because he's showing 260s basically. Sean Sullivan, he's just kind of rocketed through. And I mean, you saw him, like you said, like, what'd you think of it? How do you see the deception? How are the batters like swinging? Are they not getting good looks at it?
He gave up a ton of foul balls. Like, okay, if it was 40 foul balls that game, I thought guys were on it. I honestly came away a little bit more skeptical. He leans so much in on that fastball. Mm-hmm. And if it was 90 to 91, like a Jerpy is, because it's similar, I think I'd be in. Where I looked at Sullivan sort of like, I don't know if this is going to play, and this could get really ugly in Coors Field. So he's a guy that I'm kind of fading. I think the numbers have been good. He's interesting. I just don't want to chance it with a guy that was consistently throwing 87 mile per hour fastballs throughout the start, not mixing in a ton of secondary stuff. You know, if this was a guy that you're like, hey, he's got interesting release traits, fastball plane is good, it's deceptive, but he's got a great slider, he's got a great changeup, you know, and he throws each of those pitches 30% of the time. He's only using the fastball 40% of the time. I would be less skeptical. That's not to say that it couldn't work. He throws a lot of strikes. He just lives in the zone.
Yeah.
And that gives me some cause for concern, because at least the day that I saw him, he was not getting the swings and misses against double A hitters. And it's not exactly like New Hampshire is a bunch of world beaters. You know, the best hitters that are in that lineup, at least that day, were, you know, RJ Schreck, Charles McAdoo. You know, Rainer Nunez might have taken him deep, but he was out after the third or fourth inning because he was at like 84 pitches because of all the foul balls. Like, every at bat was like 9 pitches. So that gives me some concern. Dolander's fuel. Like, to me, Dolander in any other organization, I think, would be challenging Job for the number one spot. I mean, we have him ranked that way because we kind of don't rank based on organization. It's not a fantasy list, it's a scouting list. We're looking at the best talent. We don't really care if his home ballpark's going to stink. you know, that might hurt him from a fantasy and a production sense, but I think the stuff is still there. It's a great fastball, and I really liked his secondaries. You know, had like a shorter slider, more like a cutter that he throws in the upper 80s. He had a big breaking curveball that was like high 70s, but it had a ton of movement on it. He commanded it really well. And it felt like with a lot of right-handed hitters, they were taking that curveball because it looked like it was coming in at their ear flap, right? And then just landed in the zone, you know? And eventually he was forcing guys to swing at it. And he was kind of mixing different shapes, you know, hitting both sides of the plate with a fastball. He can land it high. He can land it low. I came away really impressed with the command. They had him going deeper into starts too. 5-6 innings, close to 100 pitches. That gives me a higher degree of confidence that this guy's going to be able to go up to the major leagues. The problem is his home park is going to scare the crap out of you as a fantasy manager. So I think what it does is if this guy was in Pittsburgh, if this guy was in Miami, you know, it doesn't even have to be a good team, but just a better ballpark. I could see Dolander coming in, being a rookie of the year contender, throwing 150 innings, giving you high strikeout totals, getting deeper into starts. The command is still pretty good. Not going to hurt himself. It's just, I don't know how any pitcher's stuff is going to play, how any break on any pitch is going to play when he's playing half of his games in Coors. That's a concern, right? They do have a good defensive outfield. I think they can help a little bit. But the home ballpark does worry me a little bit. As much as I like Dolander, just on, you know, unbiased, looking at the prospect, taking him out of the environment and just putting him into a neutral site sort of situation, almost like IVB, removing gravity. I love him, but he does give me a little bit of concern. I wouldn't be trading him if I had him in Dynasty unless the right deal came along, because I do still think it is a good starting pitcher. And eventually there's going to be somebody, I know we've been saying this for years, who's going to crack that Coors code a little bit. I don't know if it's Dolander or not, though.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I'm terrified of the home park. Like, if you just look at his AA numbers, 29% strikeout rate, 1.1 whip, 14% swinging strike, 40% ground ball rate. Those are solid numbers, and they map almost identically to Bubba Chandler. 29%, Bubba Chandler's 29% strikeout rate, 1.01 whip, 13% swinging strike rate. Like, it's basically the same, except Bubba Chandler's 1 year younger. And because he pitches in Pittsburgh, just like you're saying, speaking to exactly your point, Bubba Chandler is probably the more coveted prospect, even though they're showing basically the same thing. Good stuff, good results, young, crushing the upper levels. So I think it speaks to your point exactly that, you know, this is an elite pitching prospect, but for fantasy, you got to kind of pump the brakes a bit and kind of see how it goes. I wouldn't trade the world for him, and I might for Bubba Chandler.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, the key difference.
And it's funny because in a vacuum, I think Dolander is better than Chandler is. I mean, the fastball is better. I think the secondary is a little bit better. I saw both of them this year. But as you said, I think just the environment, you trust Chandler a little bit more to come up next year, join that rotation. Certainly, and you know, I don't know if I want to give the Pirates a ton of credit for the development of these guys, because Skeens was like ready made, right? You took him out of the package and he was like, oh, by the way, I have this splinker that my college coach wouldn't allow me to throw. Would you allow me to throw that? Sure, Paul, go ahead. And Jared Jones, I think, was always good. He always threw smoke. I think he was just underrated, you know. I think the size concerns with starters hurt him a little bit. I think we see pitchers with that great fastball and that big stuff. Regardless of what the results are, if they're 6 feet tall, I think you just get a lot of scouts, a lot of folks that just blindly put that relief label on him. And we were wrong. You know, he should have been ranked higher. He should have been a top 100 prospect going into the season much earlier, maybe even 2 years ago. But that being said, there we go. We're talking a little bit of Rockies. We're talking a little bit of Pirates. Let's talk a little Brewers. I think this might be the breakout prospect of the year, just in terms of someone that came from completely off the map. Matthews wasn't completely off the map. Quinn Matthews, who we talked about at the top of the show. KC Hunt, to me, was off the map. This was a college reliever. who I believe was drafted and then signed as an NDFA. He was drafted by the Pirates. He went back to Mississippi State and then comes into pro ball, has been tremendous. So talk to me a little bit about Casey Hunt. He's pretty high up on this list as well. And what's your level of confidence that he could be, you know, a potential rotation piece for the Brewers next year?
My confidence is quite high. I was surprised. I know I've talked about him before in RoboScout. I mean, that's results based, sort of like strikeouts and walks based with stuff. Looking at this, like whiffs on a per pitch basis and all that, it really opened my eyes. So he's got five pitches that he throws, four seamer, 1/3 of the time, slider, 30% of the time, cutter, 17% of the time, a curveball and a changeup. All the pitches are 50s or better. His best pitch graded out is the slider at a 63, so better than plus. The cutter is a 57, the curveball is 53. So he's got three different shaped breaking pitches, and they're all basically above average or plus. And the four-seamer is good too. It's what do I have here for velocity? It is 93, so, you know, not the fastest in the world, but it has an 18-inch IVB. It's minus 4.5 VAA, which is, you know, above average for double A. He throws it 32% of the time in the zone, which is a good ball percentage for a four seamer. It just has a wide range arsenal that it's all average or better. And if you look at steamer and you look at pitchers who have not in their steamer 600 projections, and you look at pitchers who have not debuted yet, his projection is Kumar Rocker was number one. Number two is, I think, Casey Hunt, and number three is Logan Henderson, another Brewer. So steamer also buys into what he's doing. And I don't know how much access they have to the sort of the per pitch data as well, but you know, it's fully sure. supported by the per pitch data. So I like Casey Hunt a lot, definitely under the radar. Definitely someone that, you know, if you can get him thrown in a deal because someone hasn't you know, kind of caught on yet that he's criminally underrated, I would try to get him in a trade for sure.
Yeah, I think Hunt to me is one of the more interesting names just broke out this year. And it's been super exciting. Here, I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball here. This is the last name we're going to talk about. You can go to the article. You can check it out. As I said, it'll be in the fantasy section. Title of the article is Minor League Pitchers with Traits to Target in Fantasy for 2025 by Mr. Dylan White. What are your thoughts on Ty Johnson? You wrote a little bit about him a couple weeks ago. Talk to me a little bit more about Johnson. He was a guy that was acquired in that Isak Paredes trade, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's a fascinating name. The fascinating part is how much of the difference. There's like a clear delineation before the trade, after the trade, with the Cubs, with the Rays, how he's performed. We talked about a couple weeks ago. His release point's now down 4 inches. Lower by 4 inches since the Rays acquired him. He's not throwing the changeup as much. He's gained velocity on the pitches as well. His four seam is a 64. So one of the highest rated four seamers using this model on whiffs, chases, CSW. The slider's a 56. So he's got two pitches basically above average and plus, which is already a good place to start. He has a two seamer and a changeup. Both are basically average. 52 and 47. He throws it in the zone. But this is on the whole season in aggregate. This is not what he's done since being on the Rays. If you look at what he's done on the Rays, like his whiff rate has increased from 39% to 42% on the four seamer. And it's basically similar across all the pitches that he's made. There seems to be a clear change in pitch design and his mechanics and the results. So this is what I mean by fascinating is, like, if this is real, tangible, substantive changes that will stick, absolutely fascinating, top 100 prospect type of thing. If this is just kind of variance and maybe, you know, maybe he's tired and that's why his release point's lower, but that doesn't make sense because his velocity has increased, then, you know, we don't know. So basically it's fascinating to see what's going to happen as it carries into 2025. I would take a shot on him. We know what the Rays do, at least in the near term with their pitchers. They seem to get the most out of them. I don't know if they sustain that performance over years, as you've seen from the, you know, the injury report on Rays pitchers, but very, very fascinating to me. And I think he's going to be a very high helium name in the offseason if he isn't already, just because of what he's done. When people kind of dig into what happened after the trade and what the Rays have done, I think he's going to be a very popular name because it's kind of a low-hanging fruit narrative to kind of spin around him.
And it's an organization that has shown time and again that they can get the most out of players that they acquire. We've seen it over and over and over again on both sides of the ball too. So I think that makes Johnson an interesting name to sort of dig a little bit deeper on and potentially target in fantasy. I thought that was a good one. And I would imagine that the price isn't going to be extremely high. I mean, maybe we're boosting it up here on this podcast right now, but I can't say that everybody in your league is listening to us, unfortunately. So we'll be your secret to victory and capturing a title through the hands of Ty Johnson. I'm really putting the hyperbole out there now. But Dylan, it's been a good talk. Minor league pitchers with traits to target in fantasy 2025. We talked a lot of pitching today. For Jeff, for Dylan, thanks for tuning in again, and we'll see you next week.
Cheers.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hessilo V2, and all new Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.